You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, incorporating AI or artificial intelligence into your strategic planning and execution can go a long way in transforming your business operations, leading to unprecedented growth and success. Now, of course, that applies even in religious organizations as well. So Timothy Oriedo, the founder and CEO of Predictive Analytics Lab, joins us from Kenya for a conversation on the current trends in AI and how they affect businesses and careers, and also how we can leverage them for best overall outcomes. Good evening, Timothy.
Yeah, good evening, Capello. You can get me loud and clear.
I can certainly hear you. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Ah, fantastic. How was your day?
My day was good. It's a bit sunny back here in the east in Nairobi.
Ah, okay. What's the temperature like today?
Temperature is about 29.
Shoo.
Lower side, 32 by max. Yeah.
Shoo, that's certainly very, very hot, eh? Yeah. Sure, yeah. And especially for this time of the day, eh?
Yes. Yeah. Supposed to be a bit rainy, but I'm sure with all the issues you're grappling about climate change and everything.
Yes. I was actually about to ask if you've had any rains at least this quarter of the year.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we had towards the tail end of last year.
Yeah,
beginning of early this year, we had some bit of rain.
Ah.
So at least we have some bit of greenery.
Yeah,
and from the farm side, we have at least some bars of fresh products coming in from the short trains.
Oh, nice. That's really, really nice. Some of the leading ones for Kenya? What can one buy from I suppose the production?
So we have, apart from the biggest product we export is tea.
Tea, and, okay.
Of course, yeah, from the highlands. We have coffee.
Mm.
We have other products like grains, maize, wheat, which now unfortunately are declining because of declining land mass.
Yeah.
Some of those cereal products need much more land.
Ah.
But we still have other products like fruits, avocado.
Yeah.
Although we still rely a lot from South Africa, especially the fruits and grapes.
Yeah.
We consume a lot from the farms in South Africa. So we still have got a bit of ground to cover when it comes to mechanization and modernizing our farming practices. Yeah, we still rely a lot on the traditional farming, which is the cycles.
I thought you were going to mention fish in there.
Interestingly, but we don't have much fish.
Okay.
We actually import fish from China and Uganda. Yeah,
sure.
So we have a small portion of Lake Victoria.
Yeah.
It's a fresh lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the fish doesn't give us much fish that we consume, so... But from a few farmers who put fish ponds.
Yeah.
And then most of the lakes within the country are not fresh water. They're salt lakes.
Oh, okay.
That they don't, because of the rifts, the Great Rift Valley.
Ah, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Nairobi, can you paint a picture for us for someone who's never been there like myself, like physically? I know I've read and looked at pictures and everything, but what's it like?
Yeah. Nairobi is quite a very vibrant city.
Yeah.
Very adaptable.
Yeah.
It's pretty much has got almost three different climates.
Yeah.
The northwest side is quite cold.
Yeah.
So the areas towards you exit towards the north, it's got areas where there's T zones and everything.
Yeah.
And then it's got the southern side where the airport is.
Yes. Yeah,
it's very warm and a bit hot. That's where I reside.
Yeah.
And then it's got the area which is quite forested.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a mix. So Nairobi is quite vibrant in terms of the population that is there. We have Experiencing a lot of rural to urban migration, people coming looking for opportunities, but also in terms of the lifestyle, it cuts across from all the divides, the affluent, the middle class, the lower quartile citizens, but we all mingle and a vibrant city with lots of opportunities and a bit of a balance, we can say insecurity, some bit of areas in security, some bit of areas out of safety. But generally it's on an upward trajectory. See a lot of commercial residential buildings coming up. Key habit for investments. But just the other day, the United Nations announced it's moving some of its staff from New York to Nairobi. So it shows you the kind of confidence some of the global institutions have around the development that we have in Nairobi. But then,
Sure.
So it's a city that we're quite proud of, and you're actually welcome.
Definitely.
You don't need a visa coming here.
Definitely.
Yeah, so you just come to the airport.
Sure, that's amazing. I've got your number. Next time I, get blessed by God and I come there, I'm like, you know what, Timothy, I'm around. I'll say I'm around.
I reside right next to the airport.
So, look at you, flexing there.
5 minutes drive.
That would certainly be beautiful. All right, let's get into the business of the day, leveraging artificial intelligence trends. But I wanted us to just start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and the work that you guys at Predictive Analytics Lab do.
All right. Yeah, so I'm mostly referred to as Coach Timothy Oredo. I'm a certified coach. Certified by ICF, International Coaching Federation, and WABC, World Association of Business Coaches. I'm an entrepreneur, founder of the company called Predictive Analytics Lab, and my background academically was in mathematics, and I master's in organizational leadership. I'm currently pursuing a PhD in corporate governance. I've worked in the media industry, managing assets such as the one you're using for this interview. Worked for the biggest broadcaster in East Africa. That's Citizen Television and radio for 12 years, and I also worked for the biggest publisher in newsprint. That's a Nation Media Group for 3 years, after which I exited and went into entrepreneurship back in the year 2015 to 2016. I founded the company called Predictive Analytics Lab. So I've been running Predictive Analytics Lab for 7 years now. What do we do at Predictive Analytics? So we help organizations make sense of information they've gathered, which is called data. How do we help them? So we help them through building their capacity in training. We've created various training programs to help organizations build the capacity to understand or to utilize technical tools to reveal the trends in information and data. So secondly, we also build softwares. We've been able to develop various softwares that are helping organizations to drive the agenda of data-driven decisions. And then lastly, we do consulting and advisory to various organizations that are looking to adopt data-driven. So we do that through three different vehicles. So we have three pillars. We have a technical pillar. The technical pillar is various tools and softwares that we design. We have an industry pillar. Our interventions are curated around different industries such as the finance industry, manufacturing industry, medical industry, government. So we develop solutions for every industry. And then also we target a professional vertical. We have developed interventions for accountants. We have developed interventions for journalists, HR professionals, finance professionals. So we ensure that no one is left behind in terms of industry and then also in terms of profession.
Oh, fantastic. That's quite a comprehensive outline of what you guys do. And I'm really interested in the data-driven analytics as well. And I particularly think that's going to be a huge part of our discussion today. Someone said data is the new currency.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yeah, that's a synonym that explains that there's value in data.
Yeah.
Yeah, that value can be accrued over time. And that value can be unlocked the use of decisions, the right decisions.
Yeah.
So in common business language, perhaps you can be able to relate to the use of data to optimize the operations of a company.
Yeah.
So how is that value extracted?
Yes.
So through the use of proper decisions, you can be able to increase your revenues.
Mm-hmm.
So which means you grow your top line, which means you're able to meet the expectations and even surpass.
Yeah.
Also, through the right use of data, you can be able to meet the expectations of optimizing of optimal use of resources, which means you're cutting down on operational costs, meaning you're able to save on costs.
Mm.
So, for example, for a company that does deliveries and can be able to optimize use of artificial intelligence to do what we call route mapping.
Yeah.
They will reduce on the routes of the fleet that uses, which means they'll use less fuel, and that means less profitability.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, so it means the product reaches the customer in a more efficient manner, timely, the customer is satisfied, and the customer, they're able to retain the customer who can be able to order more products from that company. Yes. When you say that it's a new currency, basically that's how you can relate to it.
Yeah.
It's not a currency. You put it and fold it and put it in your pocket.
Yeah.
No? But it's a currency in the sense that it adds a certain value.
Yeah.
The certain value adds to the balance sheet, as you see.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Just carrying on with that synonym, we currently are having accountants being asked to redo the balance sheet.
Yeah.
So remember the balance sheet, you have the assets on one side, and then you have the liabilities and capital on the other side.
Mm.
But then we are seeing a new entrant into the balance sheet, which is the data.
Really?
So companies are being valued based on the data they have. So just giving you an example, the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, they account for their value based on what we call average revenue per user.
Yes.
So that's a metric which they use to define what the value is. So you can see, like, Facebook has got an X amount, for example.
Yeah.
In South Africa, we can say arbitrarily maybe there are 20 million users of Facebook in South Africa. So when you say that 20 million, it's, the figure that's given officially is like in Africa, Facebook makes $4 per user per month.
Hmm.
So they multiply that $4 for 20 million, then you see it's 8 million per month. So that's data now. Good. Yeah. So we're not longer looking at what we sold, absolute, but the amount of data. Key valuations done on companies, now they're asking to look at what information do you have of your customers, how much of your customer. So in our technical practice, there's something we call customer 360 view.
Yeah.
The more information you collect about a customer, the more value you're bringing to the company.
Yeah.
Because you just need to unlock the usage of that information to get more value.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, the thought of data being part of the accounting equation in itself is mind blowing. And just to you and I maybe understand what that means, but for our listeners who might be thinking, what does that mean? So where does it sit on the accounting equation? Is it an asset? And if it is an asset, in what way?
Yeah, so it's definitely an asset because it's something that's latent and something that can be of value if it's used properly.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing is because of the work that companies such as ours are doing, we are coming in to equip organizations with the knowledge, one, then two, the equipments and skill and technical tools to help them unlock that part. And then thirdly, the strategy. Okay. So we're able to walk with them the journey of what to institutionalize within the organization to ensure that you have a data-driven mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that means that the hordes and hordes of information that were sitting static in the organizations are now being able to unlock, and we are now able to have data that can be utilized and harvested to extract monetary value. Yeah, so
It's
just
interesting
in a
that
nutshell.
it's interesting that you place it at top line revenue.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So in some industries, actually, it's treated as a top line revenue because there's a direct correlation. Yeah, like those platforms. You know, for example, Amazon may say we have a Netflix. We have X amount of subscribers. You know, so it's top line revenue. Yeah, directly.
That's quite interesting. And I think
Yeah.
it does make sense when you do valuations, right? So I suppose there's some financial modeling that you guys do to actually justify
Precisely.
why it even sits at top line revenue for any business. But also just to say, it's intangible, but it's still an asset at the end of the day because you've got this data that if you can, I suppose, mine it correctly, then it can influence how you make decisions and unlock your competitive advantage. In the
Precisely.
market and then against your competitors as well. But I just want us then
Yeah.
to look at, the current trends that you are seeing. I mean, like I'm saying, for the fact that it sits in our valuations for me is mind-blowing. I think the world is moving towards a certain direction just by using data. And that's why, like you said, it is becoming currency this nowadays, and it's an asset. But what are some of those current trends to look out for in terms of AI and our businesses then?
So in fact, even just in aspect of valuation, I can give you another example. You know, like the biggest platforms, there's Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. They were actually very unprofitable in the first, let's say, first 10 years. Yeah, and the only thing that kept them surviving, the only thing that kept investors coming in to put their money there,
Is data.
was because of the data they held. Yeah, and that data was telling a story, and that story was a promise that was being given to the investors, and they could see that future where the future is headed.
But
Yeah, so
wait,
it's
Timothy, wasn't
if an
Facebook
investor.
almost banned for because of that data that they were sitting with? I mean, that guy was through court cases because of that. And I think that's going to be my other questions around, the data that we have and the integrity, but I suppose the copyright and all the other related laws and all that. But just to go back to that point you're making, that guy almost got banned.
Yeah, of course, there was a period where there was an ungovernable set of rules that are not standardized. Yeah, and this is typical of technologies that are coming up, and governments not being able to match the pace with which the technology sectors are evolving. Yeah, but if you look at that perspective and you see where them, it's actually really the force and the push that's coming from the markets. So for example, a traditional companies such as General Motors or Coca-Cola, they look at the valuation based on the stock exchange prices. But if that was the scenario right now, you still have them as the leading companies in terms of value. But you see the script changed. The power went to the consumer, and the consumer is that better. So that's what we keep observing as an emerging trend, is where very young companies, very subtle. Evolution models. They're able to bring more investors coming in to support their quest for growth. So that's the trend.
So what you're saying, if I hear you quite correctly, is that you've got big companies that, of course, use the stock exchange to, I suppose, justify their need for growth and why investors should bring in money, right? Because of market cap valuations and all those sort of stuff. But you, what I'm hearing you saying is small companies that could compete with your big companies can compete on the basis of the data that they have, and then saying based on this data, this is what it would mean from a revenue point of view, and this is where we could be in the next 2 or 3. That's massive, Timothy.
Yes, and that's exactly why this is called a revolution, because we are seeing a revolution. We're revolutionizing the different industries. We're revolutionizing how we interact with the various traditional institutions being shaken. And yeah, it's really an exciting time to be in.
It's definitely an exciting. I mean, it's almost leveling the playing field, because if I've got data,
yes.
I mean, I can literally say to your big guys that actually I've got data that maybe you might not have. And I'm thinking corporate bureaucracy, hey Timothy, can also also because of the long chains of command within big business, their ability to respond and be agile to what the data is saying takes a bit of time. I mean, if you think about a multinational, for example, seems like we've lost Timothy there. So let me see if I can get him back. But that's massive. That's definitely massive, because it's literally leveling the playing field for small businesses and small companies if they have the data, and big business doesn't. Well, they might have the data, but their ability to be agile around what the data is communicating to them is, that's massive. That's definitely, definitely massive there. And wow, okay. Now I think this is starting to really get exciting for me. This is starting to really get exciting. And I think Timothy is bringing a very important point. So Timothy, what I was asking was, it's leveling the playing field, right? For small companies, small upcoming companies and big companies as well. But what I was asking was, in big business, you find that the span of control and the ability to be agile in the market based on what data is saying, perhaps is what becomes an opportunity for small businesses that have the data to respond to the market much quicker.
Exactly, yeah. That the responsiveness and then the advocate, I mean, what you call the agile, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then also in terms of operations, what we call lean, being able to run very lean operations,
yes.
Very meager resources,
sure.
Just because you're able to do smart decisions.
Yeah, Timothy, you've just given our small businesses a secret, and the secret lies in the data. Now, the question then is, if I'm a small business owner right now, how do I even leverage these technologies as opposed to drive towards that growth? What is it that I need to do?
Okay, that's a good question. And we spend much time with proportionately with the smaller businesses, because that's really where the most appetite is coming for our products and also our services. One of the areas we encourage them to be on the lookout for is to digitize their businesses. So in as much as we're talking about these big words, AI, blockchain, big data, the first step is digitization.
Yes.
So whatever business you are in, ensure you're able to do your business online, you're able to have interaction with your customers on mobile, on web, and any virtual platform that's available. And this goes back to the traditional marketing principles.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you're in a brick and mortar, do you have a shop that can be put on e-commerce? What is your promotional channels are you using? Are you using Facebook to boost your ads? Yeah. So what we try to show you is that there are platforms which have already been which are being driven by AI that you can already take advantage of. You know, you don't need to have the skills.
Yes.
But for example, if you go to Facebook and you have a small shop that sells or rather manufactures something like yogurt in a local town, and you like to amplify the awareness about your product, previously before these tools, you will have to spend a lot, an arm and a leg, on ads on, for example, on a national TV station or a radio station, and those ads are not targeted. But if you've got a small budget, you just go to Facebook, as little as $20, you're able to book an advert, geofence it, saying you need to reach to people with small children who utilize yogurt. You can go further and refine your audience.
Yeah.
In this local town, and you reach it. So we are seeing ourselves evangelizing that this digitization aspect as being one of the key drivers of AI adoption, and it's a key area that we want to focus. Then again, you move to other aspects, for example, the marketplace. You putting your products, for example, on our channels, e-commerce platforms for distribution. You're able to remove the need for you owning a physical shop. So you're reducing your costs of paying rent. Why? Because it's directly from a manufacturer to consumer. So that manufacturing to consumer, you're able to flatten those intermediaries. You also outsourcing some of the functions. You don't need to buy a truck, you know, for distributing your products. So you can be able to utilize a list service. You can be able to utilize riders through platforms such as Uber. You're a young chef and you don't have money to start opening a hotel. You basically can start by just cooking from a home and distributing your food through Uber Eats. All those platforms are driven by AI. Then you move a little higher, you move a tier up, you find SMEs that have been existing maybe 10 years, they would like to go to the next phase. They have done some bit of digitization, they've got some threshold of data they have. They have 50 to 100 employees, but they want to push themselves up next level and start competing with the big boys. So those ones, again, we have solutions for them. We primarily advise them around rearranging the structure of their teams, having someone within the team who primarily focuses on analytics, developing an appetite or a mindset for people to be referencing to numbers when making decisions. So there's a department that basically similar to finance that looks at financial information. So we have encouraged them to create departments such as analytic departments, having teams that basically focus on information and distributing that information across the entire company. So those are kind of interventions that we have for the SMEs. And we keep evolving based on what the need is, again, and as depending on the industry. So some industries are regulated more than others. Like the medical field, the financial sector, the things you can do. So we also want to give them awareness in terms of the data protection, data rights of the consumers, asking for permission from the owners of the data before you use the data. Because again, in as much as data is an asset, it can also be a liability. When you have too much data and you've not protected yourself, well, someone can come and sue you.
Definitely.
Wrongful use of the data, and you may have to pay litigation.
Things like data, back. Data privacy, and all those sort of stuff start lingering around your doorstep, if you're not careful around that. Now, when I did my paper for my MBA, Timothy, one of the things that I realized in the Kenyan market, because I was looking at the advancement of technology and the adoption of technology in sub-Saharan Africa, one of the things that I realized was Kenya was leading in that particular sphere. So my question is, how is the adoption of these AI technologies as a person who's on the ground in Kenya in terms of small businesses as well? Do you find that the adoption digitizing that you spoke about there, how much of it is actually being adopted and at what rate?
So it's a bit of an anthropological a study that you can be able to relate to why Kenya is a bit on the advancing stage. Because we look at the industrial revolutions. We have had four industrial revolutions in the world. Actually, we have a fifth industrial revolution that's beckoning, but we still optimize on the fifth or the fourth one. And Kenya sort of leapfrogged from the second industrial revolution quickly, much more quickly to the fourth.
I would say from the first to the fourth.
Why? Because of mobile telephones.
Definitely.
Some data which has been shared to show some households who don't even have a toothbrush, but they have a mobile phone.
Yes.
They'll never brush their teeth, but they have a mobile phone.
That was interesting.
Yes. So we had that jump and that leap in the 2000s when the government adopted the mobile telephone. And perhaps because of the nature of our infrastructure. We struggle a lot with setting up the cables for the telephones back then because of financial constraints and poverty, and electricity penetration was very low.
Yeah.
So we leapfrog when telephones came, they started becoming cheaper.
Yeah.
It was wireless transmission of signal, and then we started seeing electricity penetration. Yeah, and then of course, new platforms started riding on the mobile phone. So we started having M-Pesa, which is money. People who had never stepped in a bank
are
now having access to money in their pockets. Yeah. When we used to send money to our folks using courier services like a bus, we'll send money in an envelope until it travel overnight. Nowadays, so it's changed. Yeah, so the adoption is quite high. And remember the reason, one of the points I gave you at the beginning when you talked about application of AI in businesses, I talked to you about digitization. Businesses have to so when you digitize, there's availability of data.
Yes.
If you don't digitize, there's been no data available. So that's one of the things that has enabled Kenya to be at the forefront, because all of a sudden, we have lots of data. You can be able to create credit score algorithms to give out loans, even for people who don't have bank accounts.
Yeah,
just by looking at the transactional history on their mobile wallets. Yeah, you can be able to, derive a lot of insights from their movements. For example, of Uber and other mobile hailing apps. Just to be able to extract the personality and behavior patterns of our individuals.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the key drivers. Yeah. Then, of course, on the other side, you have the availability of knowledge.
Yeah.
We have a lot of institutions, and about 6-7 years ago, I used to travel a lot to South Africa to do trainings. We were building a lot of capacity there.
Yeah.
We used to train banks, institutions around data analytics.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we were ahead in terms of driving that knowledge. But we built capacity across the continent. So we have a partner in South Africa that once in a while we still collaborate in running those trainings. We have our technology being used in South Africa. We have clients there. Currently, we are running some projects in South Africa, in Nigeria, in Ghana, Ethiopia as well. Yeah, so we can say that Kenya is in one of the forefronts of developing and building adoption of data across the continent and also globally.
And I think the mobile adoption has been catalytic in a very, very massive way in Kenya there. And of course, Kenya then becomes one of the biggest four countries in the African continent. That saw a lot of VC investments from a technological adoption point of view, and I suppose that unlocking a lot of businesses. You mentioned M-Pesa and all those other stuff of businesses as well. We're running out of time, but I want to get into this one. What are the ethical and legal considerations for the using leveraging these AI platforms?
So I'll start with the ethical considerations. So these ethical considerations are more at a personal level. So we find, because of the wide adoption of these tools, it sort of has put a strain on things like societal values, family values. We having a disintegration of values through the media, which is shared especially on our channels that are not controlled. We've also seen change of behavior. So less personal communication. Yes. People are becoming more mobile, more personal. We have less and less bonds. We're creating at both level, at work level. So those ethical considerations are really something that have to be developed in very purpose. Someone has to purpose to set those ethics. And one of the mitigations around that, for example, at personal level, is creating your own rules within your house. If you've got a family, you can say there's a time when it's a family time, no devices.
Yes.
Television is off, the mobile phone is off. Yeah. Yeah. Creating your you time. Something we an awareness program we run called the Digital Detox.
Okay.
Yeah, which is essentially being able to withdraw yourself from these devices for a certain period of time to, you know, just free up your mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, reset yourself, go back to the settings.
Yeah, so definitely.
The other part now for the legal considerations mostly is around governance and what are the regulatory boundaries, regulatory frameworks that are evolving to insulate various users of this ecosystem. So we have governments giving us guidelines on how to engage, trying to match and catch up with the academia, because again, just to inform you that most of these innovations happen in academia.
Yeah.
By the time they come to the light, the session, they're being used by the technology companies.
Mm.
Yeah. So, for example, ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
ChatGPT is a form of a generative AI that learns by itself, and it's now being regulated by countries where they're saying, "Can we regulate it? Because what if this generative AI is gonna learn things beyond the human?" So that brings in an aspect of legislation where you'd say, can we limit it? So there are some sectors which are quite sensitive, for example, healthcare, education system. So what if the AI decides certain people are going to learn more than others? So it's going to create those rights.
Exclusionary clauses and everything that you know, these higher institutions already, higher institutions are very exclusionary because of their criteria to just get into the university itself. I suppose because they want to maintain their rankings and make sure, you know, that apparently the less students, the more the rating that they get, or the higher the rating they get, because then everyone wants to be in that university, and means then it takes the top students from, I suppose, your secondary schooling and all those sort of stuff, and then it raises their profile and everything. I mean, that's already exclusionary. Imagine what AI would then do just in that space from, I suppose, even from an ethical point of view, just to round up on that one. I love the point you made about how, for example, you know, these AIs are also, they are creating what I term an artificial family. Right, where everyone is just on their phones. I mean, WhatsApping each other, but they're in the same house. You know, they've got a family WhatsApp group, and that's where they communicate. But they're in the same house. Literally, you could just put your smartphone down and go to that person who's sitting across your couch and all the sort of that. And so it's becoming a whole lot more. But any final remarks? Because I do think, Timothy, we haven't even scratched the surface on this one. I'd really like to have further discussions with you. But any final thoughts on this particular topic?
Yeah, so I think just to my final thoughts will be first to individuals, to be able to challenge yourself, to in your sphere of influence, to be able to try to nudge anyone who's around you to be conscious of the evolving landscape, career-wise. Yeah, the skills which are currently changing and may be redundant in the coming future. So try to spend as much time as possible to understand what are those skills which are needed, sustainability of those skills into the near future. And then for businesses also, trying to avoid the run-of-the-mill business, what we call the business strategies, copy-paste business strategies, trying to be as creative as possible, adopting to lean business canvas models that can be able to utilize data, putting data at the heart of it. So those are my two calls, both for individual perspectives and then also for businesses.
Thank you so much, Timothy. Thank you so much. That is really beautiful. Yeah. And I would really like to connect. And let's continue this conversation some other time as well.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you too. And thank you for hosting. Okay, bye.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.